Broadcast. Happy birthday to John Randolph. Democracy Now! Has two job openings, administrative director, as well as a seasoned Linux systems administrator, as well as fall internships. Check out democracynow.org/jobs for more information. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Aaron Maté, Nermeen Sheikh, Steve Martinez, Sam Alkoff, Hani Massoud, Robbie Caron, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. Thank you very much to Mike DeFilippo and Miguel Nogueira, our engineers, Becca Staley, Julie Crosby, Hugh Grant, Jessica Lee, John Wallach, Vesta Godars, and Dennis Moynihan. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
Henry Ford College now has open enrollment for the summer and fall semesters of 2014. HFC's summer semester begins on July 1st and the fall semester starts on August 28th. You can register for classes online at hfcc.edu or on campus, which is located at 5101 Evergreen Road in Dearborn, Michigan. Or for more information, you can call 313-845-9600 or go online to hfcc.edu. See you soon!
Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Happy to have you with us today. It is June the 27th, 2014. And my name is Jay Koronick. I'm station advisor here at WHFR-FM. Happy to give you a show that is all about what's going on locally in Dearborn and the surrounding area. We're local news and alternative views. This is WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford College. Hope you're having a great day out there. I'm going to go have a great weekend. We've got a lot of great stories on our list for this weekend. A lot of different activities are happening around town. I'll start with, by the way, let me introduce my co-host, John Conroy, who is our WHFR news director. How are you doing today, John?
Good, Jay. It's good to be here.
Yeah. Well, it's good to be somewhere. That's what I always say. In my area, which is called Springwells Park, or Historic Springwells Park, it's an area in East Dearborn where the homes and the apartment complexes were pretty much designed by, I think, Edsel Ford doing something good for Dearborn. His father or grandfather, the original Henry Ford, began a number of homes, typical suburban sort of tract homes. There was like six basic models, and he had those built in West Dearborn starting around 1920 for his executives to live closer to the Ford complexes, the Ford offices here in Dearborn. And so that was his subdivision that he created. So he's actually one of the first people to create the subdivision, you know, the tract homes, the idea of just six basic models and all up and down the streets, you know, and they would all be built at the same time. Mm-hmm. And now that's an official historic district. I happen to live in that historic district when I first moved to Dearborn. And now it turns out I'm in another historic district. I think there's only two, though. Not sure.
Oh, yeah.
There could be another one around there somewhere. And it's Springwells Park. It's in the intersection. It's the northwest corner of Greenfield and Rotunda. Okay? And in that area, we're having a garden tour tomorrow. Okay? And so between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m., you just pull into the St. Kateri Catholic Church parking lot. That's at Rotunda Drive before you get to Greenfield. And the tickets are $10 a person. Children 10 and under are free. They will give you a map, a walking tour path, and all the information you need to walk around the neighborhood. And certain homes and their beautiful gardens are up for inspection, not just front yard, but even backyard. There'll be signs and so on after you get the map. I want to say that those $10, by the way, doesn't go to us in Springwells Park. It goes to the American Cancer Society on behalf of Cool Chicks Conquering Cancer. Hmm. Cool Chicks Conquering Cancer. I should make sure to see who those cool chicks are tomorrow.
Quadruple C's.
Yeah, it's hard to say. But so that's the historic Springwells Park Garden Tour tomorrow, Saturday, June 28th. Rotunda Drive in Greenfield, start at the St. Kateri Catholic Church parking lot. That church has been renamed in the last year because the congregations joined together with someone in a congregation in Melvindale. The Catholic Church closed one of their churches down there, and now they're building an addition. I guess they need more space because all those people are driving up from Melvindale and elsewhere that, you know, in between, too. Just another merger between Dearborn and Melvindale.
Consolidation time.
First the fire department, and then the Catholic churches. Okay. But St. Kateri is actually the name of a Native American. Huh. It's the first Native American saint ever identified as such by the Catholic Church. And so giving some credence to the contributions of the Native Americans who were here first, and it was their land. Anyway, won't go into it. But anyway, that's the historic Springwells Park Garden Tour tomorrow from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. And the gardens are open, by the way, from 10 to 4. So if you get your ticket at 2 p.m. at the St. Kateri Church, Catholic Church on Rotunda, you still got 2 hours to walk around to see the gardens. So I got to get home early this evening from WHFR so I can cut my grass.
You still got time to spruce your place up, Jay.
Yeah. I mean, they want everybody, even if you're not on the garden tour, literally to make it look nice there, and it is a nice place to live, that particular area. Some people, if you haven't looked at that area, you don't realize it's the old, sort of the new, what they call the New England style plan. Most of the streets, including my street, are a cul-de-sac. In mm-hmm. other words, there's only like 8 or 10 houses mm-hmm. on the street, and there's a little circular turnaround at the end, and there's no sidewalks.
And I grew up in one of those cul-de-sacs in New England, so I know all about
that. Okay, yeah. And it's really cute because the cul-de-sacs, nonetheless, are connected by walking paths. Mm-hmm. So there's all kinds of different routes you can take up and down the streets and throughout the neighborhood to have a different walk for exercise, recreation, whatever, every day. So you can't drive too easily. There's only 3 or 4 streets you can sort of drive around in. But the cul-de-sacs are all connected by these little sidewalks, and so you have very pleasant time with a slightly different walk every day. You know, you don't get bored from going up and down those same rectangular kind of subdivision streets.
Right.
And
right.
A lot of trees and flowers usually anyway. So, okay. Moving on. What else is happening, John, this weekend?
Well, there's a number of events happening. One is the Downriver Cruise. That starts essentially tonight with a Mustang rally and a Mustang parade, and then goes into tomorrow, all day tomorrow, on 4th Street between Riverview and Lincoln Park.
Yep. Is that the same Mustang group you think that'll be at the Trenton Summerfest this weekend?
I bet they'll show up there as well.
I mean, if they got gas in their tank, Mustangs are Mustangs, right?
They're close by. You won't worry about horse.
Yeah, wild horses can't keep us away.
That's right.
No, because the Mustangs are those wild horses, yes.
That's for sure.
That's great. But can you tell us a little about the Trenton Summerfest?
Yeah, the Trenton Summerfest begins today and is continuing through Saturday and Sunday. There's lots of live music happening in that event, and it is lots of food vendors and lots of games to play.
You're from that area, so where is it based?
It's based right in downtown Trenton on Biddle and Jefferson.
Okay, Biddle and Jefferson.
Yeah,
okay.
Biddle and Jefferson, and wine and craft beer tasting. Some excellent groups will be playing, and That's all, and it's we're doing it this season. They're starting it early, or they're doing an early festival, so we don't conflict with the Wyandotte Art Fair.
Okay. Well, but it's this weekend, so don't miss that, folks. If you're taking a little drive down to Trenton, that'll be a fun thing to do, too.
That's for sure.
And just a reminder, Fools, the comic fable by Neil Simon, is the this is the last weekend for the play's performances here at Henry Ford College, Adrae Auditorium, their main our main campus on Evergreen Road, 8 o'clock tonight and tomorrow night, and 2 p.m. on Sunday. John and I, as a matter of fact, showed up for last Sunday's performance.
The 2 o'clock matinee. That's right.
Yep. And that was very enjoyable. One of the things they point out there, and we're not giving away the ending or anything, folks, but this fictional community, I mean, it's a fable, comic fable, not true, but there's a meaning behind it, okay? A lot of heavy-duty meaning there. And this community got under a curse, this small Russian town, that everybody born there, and I think it had been for at least 200 years or more, mm-hmm. were stupid for the rest of their life. I felt stupid for a second there trying to figure out the words.
Yeah.
And until the curse is broken. And so it's a new teacher gets there, a teacher whose job is education, and he has that problem of how to break the curse. I mean, he can't teach anybody anything if they're just born stupid and they're going to stay that way. But one of the interesting things that the play didn't make a lot of, and I think the major plot is about how to eliminate stupidity. Oh, there was a great line, if you remember, John, because at a certain point they thought, oh, you know, I'm not going to be able to break the curse, said the teacher. And the doctor there that he was brought to the community by, the doctor said, well, that's okay if you have to stay stupid. You could always go into politics.
Yeah, right.
I thought that was a really good line.
There were some great lines.
Yeah, and then woven in there, very subtle, of course, Neil Simon, you know, great writer, is that besides the fact that people are forced to stay stupid by this curse, there's no love. And it's something like Neil Simon, I guess he's saying that love, or romantic love at least, can't exist if there's no intelligence. And that, you know, that imagination, that creativity, and that knowledge of what's going on, that's all part of the love experience. And it wasn't expanded on there, but it was mentioned several times, especially towards the end of the play, that even though people marry and have kids, there's no love because they're all forced to be stupid.
They're all forced that way. Yep.
So there's a reason not to be stupid, folks, okay, if that's true. And let's see, what else? As long as we're doing the survey of things to catch this weekend. Mm-hmm. Hazardous waste. Now, that's not a garden tour, but there is a hazardous waste collection set up here at Henry Ford College, not for the college, but for all, Dearborn and all the surrounding communities. And the story, let me find it, the pressing guide last Sunday. Here it is. 11A. Oh, my goodness. They got it buried. But this is also in the e-newsletter from the City of Dearborn. And if you're not signed up for that, go to cityofdearborn.org. And if you live in Dearborn, just give them your email address, and they'll send you all these nice, nicely written stories based on some of their press releases, but very up-to-date, like, for example, this weekend about the hazardous waste issue here at Henry Ford Community College. Okay, the time is, and again, this is the Evergreen Road, south of Ford Road, main campus of Henry Ford College, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. tomorrow. Okay. County officials, Wayne County is in charge of this here, want to underscore the importance of properly disposing of medical sharps, such as syringes, needles, and lancets. Used needles can transmit serious diseases such as HIV and hepatitis. And so here are the do's of medical sharp disposal. Place used needles, syringes, and lancets in a hard plastic or metal container with a screw-on or tightly screwed lid. Just to be careful, even when you're donating them, okay? Containers commonly found in households will work like liquid laundry detergent bottles or metal coffee cans. Label the outside of the container to say medical sharps. Take the secured containers to a local household hazardous waste collection like the one we're having tomorrow here at the college. Now, in addition to that, we're also receiving And this is for, I said Dearborn and the surrounding areas, but Wayne County residents only. So don't you dare come down here from Oakland County with your waste. It's Wayne County only. Household paint stains and dyes. So if you still got some of that around, it's probably no good anymore. That should not be tossed out in your regular trash. Floor wax, floor care products, carpet cleaner, that shouldn't go in the regular trash either. Furniture polish, bathroom cleaners, stain removers, solvents. Pharmaceutical waste, that's non-controlled substances only. So controlled substance is a prescription drug thing. I always wonder, where do I take my unused prescription drug containers?
Yes. Yep.
I think I get taken back to the pharmacy. Although last time I was at my CVS, I thought there was a sign up saying I had to buy for $4 a container that I could then put them in and give to them. That seems
some other places do have disposable buckets to drop those off in.
Okay. Nail polish, glue, that's hazardous waste, fertilizer, lawn and garden chemicals, pesticides, if you're not going to use them, and maybe you shouldn't anyway, you can bring them to the college tomorrow. Antifreeze, motor oil, and gasoline. Automobile batteries, dry cell batteries. I got a bunch of those. we constantly have a bucket, though, over in the campus safety office.
I've seen the bucket.
Where you can drop it off. There's no big sign on it. I always have to go over and ask, well, where's the bucket? They keep moving it around to another corner of that building, but
it's still there.
Yep. Also, fluorescent bulbs, all types. That's hazardous waste. You should not toss them out in your regular trash. Fire extinguishers, smoke detectors, electronics recycling too. You know, computers, computer monitors, printers, scanners, keyboards, mice. That is the electronic kind of mice. You can bring those in because those have toxic chemicals in them too. A lot of mercury, which is poisonous. So you can't just have those in a regular landfill.
Cell phones,
fax machines, copiers, and televisions. Okay, all things like that. And there's more information about that, of course, Wayne County Environmental Services webpage, but you can just go to waynecounty.com and look it up there if you want to know. I do know that sometimes there's a little bit of wait because people are there helping you with what you're dropping off. There's a number of containers pictured from last year's event and in the paper, in the photo in the paper. And so sometimes there's a little bit of a delay getting to a drop-off location. It's not just one line of cars. There'll be three, four, five lines with these same containers, but there'll be people advising you what to put where and whether or not it's something they're going to accept. By the way, other things. They will not be accepted. Okay, let me do these. Commercial waste, industrial waste, radioactive materials. They won't take those. Explosives. Keep those fireworks to yourself.
Keep the fireworks somewhere else.
And we got an article about that coming up next then. Ammunitions. That's ammunition. 55-gallon drums, they won't take. Shock-sensitive materials, household trash, refrigerators, microwaves, or other appliances, tires, yard waste, and concrete. You can't give them tomorrow. Okay? But this is usually once a year you get to get rid of this stuff. So maybe you want to go home and sort of load up your cars or trucks or whatever tonight so you can get an early start tomorrow morning to drop off that hazardous waste. Henry Ford College, I'm sure you'll see the signs once you get here, somewhere on our main campus, probably in our large central parking lot since we're closed for the weekend. And that's 5101 Evergreen Road just south of Ford Road. What about that those fireworks, John? What's the new rules in Dearborn?
Yeah, the new rule in Dearborn is that you can't have fireworks at your property, at your own home. I don't have the story. Yes, I do.
Yes, you do.
Yes. Here it is. Dearborn residents are reminded of state local laws related to fireworks use. As the 4th of July approaches, Dearborn residents are reminded to follow those local laws regarding the purchase and use of fireworks, as well as exercise extreme caution. Consumer fireworks are only allowed on certain days. The use of fireworks is restricted to the day before, day of, or day after national holidays, such as the 4th of July.
Right. The 4th of July is next Friday. By the way, the Journal will be live here. We'll still be doing catch-up stories. I usually do a spirited reading, which goes on a while, of the Declaration of Independence. But I think it's something you ought to know. You ought to remember the exact words that started this whole country in the direction that we're still going in.
We'll wait till after the show to shoot off our own bottle
rockets. So like Thursday night, July 3rd, people in Dearborn could set off, again, the legal fireworks, and Friday night, and they say the day after, too?
They say the day after.
Yes, yes. So that would be the 5th, but not the 6th, folks, or the 7th. Anything else there, John?
Well, they're just been, we Dearborn residents are encouraged, to call 313-943-3030 to anonymously report unsafe or illegal activity in their neighborhood, or to call 911 if there is a dangerous or emergency situation arising.
Yeah, right. And it is a civil infraction. If the police come there, they will give you a ticket. It's not a misdemeanor crime. Well, I think maybe it should be. And I just want to say those usage days, just the day before, the day of, and the day after the holiday, the July 4th, not the whole weekend, just next Friday. So Thursday, Friday, and Saturday in Dearborn. But each community has their own little special variations on that. So it may be different in Taylor or Dearborn Heights or whatever. So be sure to check with your local city, not the guy that sells you the fireworks, your local city police department, for what the rules are where you live.
And there's certainly you see all the pop-up tents all around the areas that are selling those fireworks. But I still say use extreme caution.
Yeah, you have to know what you're buying, too. And I wouldn't trust somebody who's there one day and gone the next. You might be buying something that will explode like crazy, and you thought it was a firework or something that would go up in the sky, you know. So you have to have a little bit of knowledge there in order to reduce the danger of injury. Personally, I'm just going to go to the professional fireworks displays, and we have one great one for two nights coming up at Dearborn Homecoming on the night of August 2nd and August 3rd, Saturday and Sunday of that weekend at Dearborn's Ford Field. Don't fool around if it's your safety or your family's safety or the safety of the guy living next door to you that you're shooting off the fireworks for, because fires can get started.
Yes, I'm strictly an
observer.
And people
can be injured.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Let's see. Anything else here for the weekend? Yes.
Another event that's going on, another summer festival, actually, is the Taylor Summer Festival.
Oh, yeah.
June 26th through the 29th, with all the festivities involved in every other place has, food and games. And there's a country star, Phil Vassar, singing tomorrow night at Heritage Park. And there's the concert tickets are $10 in advance and $15 at the door. That's always a very well-attended festival and is a part of the weekend get-togethers this week.
And there are Independence Day celebrations, of course. Grabbing the paper. I've got it here.
Okay.
I think.
Salute to America.
Among other things, yes.
I'll say it. It's July the 2nd through the 5th, the Salute to America. Mm-hmm. Four-day 4th of July celebration featuring activities for adults and children, games and food, and nightly concerts by the DSO, Detroit Symphony Orchestra.
And that's what they do every year at Greenfield Village. What I usually do, because I don't live too far from Greenfield Village, and a lot of people do this, they don't pay to go into the village, but there's a road, and it's called Village Road, that's part of their complex, but outside their walls, and you can just park all over the grass and on the median. And I used to just bicycle down there, and we just stand there, and because the walls aren't that tall, so you can see the fireworks going off beautifully right from that little road.
Yes.
And there's no charge or cost or whatever, although 25 to 30,000 people actually pay and go into the village, and that's nice for the village to get some money. And they have, I think I did that one year though. And yes, it's the Detroit Symphony. It's a wonderful program. The tickets, though, to get in, this is the Salute to America, July 2nd through 5th evenings, $12.75 to $60.
Mm-hmm.
I think they give you a chair to sit on at $60. I think they do.
Closer proximity to the
orchestra. The $12.75 could be for children or something also. And there's other events going on there, too. Families are encouraged to bring blankets or comfy chairs and a picnic dinner and enjoy the evening in the village. The concert takes place on Walnut Grove, where historical baseball games typically take place.
And the village people are doing their activities as well throughout the during that time.
The village people got back together? Oh, it's not the rock group.
Not the rock group, oh, okay. But the village people, I call them.
Oh, okay. So that's the interpreters?
The interpreters and the folks that do the candle making and et cetera.
Well, a lot of things going on there. So
yeah. I've been there to the show before.
It's and one good. Of the, one of the pieces they always perform is the 1812 Overture by Tchaikovsky, and it actually is going to be featuring real cannons. Rather than just a big bass drum going boom, boom, they're gonna fire off real cannons. Oh, my goodness. And as the orchestra plays, fireworks will fill the sky in time with the music. Okay.
Choreographed a little bit there.
Yeah. So that's what we do locally here, too. And that's it's a great event. And as I said, you don't necessarily have to go into the village. You can just park on the village road there and anywhere on the grass, on the median, because the lots are usually filled with people who've gone into the village already, you know. But you can get there, I don't know, even 7:30, 8 o'clock, and, of course, at sunset, which is about 9 or 9:30 or something, the fireworks will get started. Yep. Okay. Yep. I think we did that. Let's get into some other topics here. The things are going on in Dearborn. We've got a lot of stories from the regular paper. Of course, I know a lot of things are happening as we go towards that holiday weekend next weekend. But let's take a look here. Let's listen to a couple of the short commentaries back-to-back from Jim Hightower, our friendly national populist commentator who is based in Austin, Texas. But we love to share his opinions. The first one is about police or soldiers. What do we really have? And the second one is a fun one. Talks about he thinks the Pope should come to Wall Street. What could that be about? Okay. Listen to Jim Hightower, and we'll be back with more Journal right after these great comments.
From 1776 forward, Americans have opposed having soldiers do police work on our soil. But in recent years, Pentagon chiefs have teamed up with police chiefs to circumvent that prohibition. How? Simply by militarizing police departments. Through the little-known military transfer program, the Pentagon has been shipping massive amounts of surplus war equipment to our local gendarmes. This reflects a fundamental rewiring of the mindset now guiding neighborhood policing. Police chiefs today commonly send out squads brandishing heavy arms and garbed in riot gear for peaceful situations. Recruiting videos now feature clips of SWAT team officers dressed in black, hurling flash grenades into a home, then storming the house, firing automatic weapons. Who wants anyone recruited by that video working their neighborhood? As a city councilman in rural Wisconsin commented when told his police were getting a 9-foot-tall armored vehicle, somebody has to be the first to say, "Why are we doing this?" The New York Times reports that the town's police chief responded that there's always a possibility of violence. Really? Who threatens us with such mayhem that every burg needs a war zone armory and a commando mentality? Astonishingly, a sheriff's spokesman in suburban Indianapolis offered this answer: veterans. The sheriff's department needed a mine-resistant armored vehicle, he explained, to defend itself against U.S. veterans returning from the Afghanistan war. War veterans, he said, have the ability and knowledge to build homemade bombs and to defeat law enforcement techniques. This is Jim Hightower saying that is lame, loopy, insulting, shameful, and just plain stupid. Maybe he just forgot to pack his brain when he left for work that day, but I'm afraid it's a window into the altered mindset of police chiefs and trainers.
To get more of Jim Hightower's populist take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to, visit www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Amazing! Some people who've long enjoyed a lifestyle of old money elegance are suddenly trying to downscale their lives and show a bit more of the common touch. They're not corporate chieftains, but they do run multi-million dollar operations and consider themselves role models for the masses. They are the Catholic bishops of the United States, and it's that role model thing that has them a bit flummoxed. Many are living in grand residences with extensive staffs and personal servants, socializing with the wealthy and political elites, moralizing from elevated pulpits, and, well, generally living in a lofty manner. This has left many of them aloof from the common folk, the very flock they supposedly tend. For years, such privileges for the bishops were accepted as normal, even deserved. Then, last year, Francis happened. Like a hurricane, a new pontiff and a new ethic hit the Catholic hierarchy. Pope Francis lives a Spartan life and goes openly and gladly among the masses, while stressing simplicity and personal humility as the proper demeanor for the clergy. The Church's moral emphasis, Francis says, by word and deed, must be on service to the poor and disadvantaged, and the existence of economic inequality must be a top priority, addressed as a social evil. So we now have the phenomena of bishops scrambling to cut extravagances, allocating more resources to the down and out, focusing on economic justice, becoming more available to ordinary parishioners, and, well, appearing more like Francis. Actually, though, they're not aligning their lifestyles and work with the Pope, but with the life and teaching of Jesus, the founder of their church. This is Jim Hightower saying, wow, that's a most impressive conversion. So here's an idea. If Francis can have this effect on the elites of the church, what say we turn him loose on the hubris of Wall Street and the extravagances of the corporate elites?
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
You're listening to the new WHFR Journal for June 27th, 2014. John and Jay here with you. I'm Jay. And we have a couple of reminders. I just had a commentary on that, too. Apparently, last week, I watch a lot of the satirical comedy on TV, and I think the best is, of course, on Comedy Central, Jon Stewart's The Daily Show, and Stephen Colbert's Colbert Report, as he calls it. And, of course, he's going to be dropping the sort of satirical persona that he uses on that show when he takes over David Letterman next January. He's the host, appointed host, the heir apparent to David Letterman's late night comedy variety talk show. And so it'll be interesting to see if he can maintain his momentum when he doesn't have to act totally crazy anymore. I'm sure he will still do a lot of political spoofing and so on, but it remains the same. But the other program is Real Time with Bill Maher, and that's on HBO. And I talked Wow Cable into giving me a free year of HBO.
Wow.
When I complained about their prices going up for the other services. So I just have to remember to cancel it before they start charging me the extra $18 a month next January. Mm. But that's on once a week, but they repeat it often. Real Time with Bill Maher is great. Great comedy and political insight. And one of the things he said was that he normally is totally, just like Jim Hightower, totally agrees with Pope Francis on almost every stance that Pope Francis has taken, obviously more liberal stance than previous recent popes have taken on social issues. Mm-hmm. And he said, though, this last time Pope Francis was saying that, you know, definitely don't use any drugs, any illegal drugs. It was a statement of don't do drugs. And basically that's fine. But Bill Maher had to go on to say that do you really want to believe somebody who says things like that, but also talks to invisible people every day, praying to Jesus or God or whatever. Of course, he is a well-known atheist and supporter of legalization of marijuana.
Yes.
That's his two big things, in addition to all the other comedy and political insights that he shares through his show. And so it's understandable he didn't want the don't do drugs thing, that comment by Pope Francis applied to the marijuana situation, which he thinks is completely different. Okay. Well, there's all different points of view, and we encourage all of our listeners to make sure that you don't believe anything John and I or any of the stories, the editorial opinions that we share with you. We want to challenge you to do some research and reading on your own and then make your own decision, an intelligent decision. Yeah, if we stimulate you a little bit to do a little research or reading and then make your own mind up and maybe make a change in your life or your approaches to some of these issues, great. But not just because we say so or Jim Hightower says so, that's not enough to change things. But change is needed, so, you know, get to work on it. Of course, a reminder about voting. Voting is not the only thing when we're talking about politics and the future of our country, but it's the first thing to make sure you do. And if you're not registered to vote in your local communities, as we said last week, the deadline is
July 7th for the August 5th primary.
Right.
Please exercise your right to have a say in government.
Yep. And it's because there's July 4th holiday and then the weekend, and so you can still go into your Secretary of State's office, not Secretary of State. Yes, you can actually get your driver's license renewed and register to vote at the same time at Secretary of State's office. But if you don't need your driver's license renewed right now, don't worry about that. Go to the city clerk's office in your city or township and do it certainly by the end of the day on July
the 7th,
a week from Monday. Okay, and because if you're not registered, you can't even choose not to vote because you just can't vote. And you can't choose the last second to go vote. Oh, I found somebody I think I'd like to vote for. Well, sorry, you're not registered. Oh, yeah, right. So doesn't cost anything, just a couple pieces of ID. Can do it in a few seconds. Go to your city clerk's office or township clerk's office and register to vote. Get other people who are not registered registered. Okay?
And also, there'll be another time a month before the general election in November to register as well. So don't wait.
Right.
Register as soon as you can and become part of the process.
Yeah, the primary is really important this year, and in terms of selecting the two finalists for Wayne County Chief Executive.
Yes.
And there's some ballot proposals asking for money. One is for the smart buses. Mm-hmm. And those are a great service to people all throughout the county. They're not the same thing as the Detroit buses.
Nope.
But they provide a needed service because they can sort of pick you up and take you places that you want to go. I mean, so it's not a certain line or pathway. It's a great service to our community, and I think they just need a renewal. But if you don't get the renewal, it's gone. And we know we need that kind of public transit until they can get the buses working better in the Detroit Metro Transit Authority, and they're making changes there, I guess, but oh my gosh, it's still quite a problem. So that plus another funding issue, and we'll update you as we get close to that. In fact, we'll be at Dearborn Homecoming, of course, broadcasting live the Journal on August 1st from 1 to 2 o'clock, but also reports each day with people around there, politicians running for office, and local elected officials, even those not running for office, maybe some people from the school board and so on, and from the college here. So we'll have a lot of information going on over the air that weekend. And also, come on out there and join us. Come by the WHFR tent. That's August 1, 2, and 3, a little ways away. But that's right before the primary on the 5th.
That's right.
So it's the Tuesday right after homecoming weekend. And as John said, this is the registration deadline is July 7th, and for November, it's early October. But we'll remind you again there just to, and again, if you're not registered, you can't even choose not to vote validly, I don't think. Doesn't mean anything. If you, I am not going to vote. Yeah, well, you can't because you didn't register. Just a contradiction in terms. So I think if you really don't believe in voting, you should show everybody by registering, and then don't vote. No, I don't agree with that philosophy, but I'm just saying it means nothing if you don't register that you choose not to vote. Okay? Anyway, that's my spin on that. And all the opinions on this show.
These are opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of anyone at HFC or WHFR.
Very good, John. You finally got it memorized.
Almost.
I know you have it written down.
I got it
too,
written down, but it's
okay.
Getting close.
Okay.
Now.
Real good. Well, we've got a couple important stories here that have turned up. You perhaps heard, it was in last Sunday's Dearborn Press and Guide, Dearborn's Fairlane Mall is going to be sold. And a company outstate is buying it as part of buying up. It's buying up an awful lot of different shopping malls around the country. They are, of course, the current owners are Taubman Centers of Bloomfield Hills. And the new company is Starwood Capital Group. And they're out of Greenwich, Connecticut. But they're buying shopping malls all over. And it doesn't seem they're going to close them, but there is a sort of a reference to something here. Grabbing at the paper fiendishly, feverishly, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, here it is. In the Times Herald story, as it's continued on page 8, and if you do get the paper regularly, and I hope you do, because we can't give you all the stories there in just an hour. We can't. We just don't have time for that, folks. But here's the okay. Anyway, there the quote is, I guess it's in the present guy, but the quote is that they want to turn around these properties and make them more make more money out of them. Now, how would you do that? What would you do to Fairlane Mall to turn it around and make more money? I can hardly wait to find out. It does sound like there could be, and it would be awful if it did happen, they could tear down the place once they own it and build up something else, like a bunch of condos or something. Now, that would be a heck of a deconstruction project because that's a big building. I've joked in the past that with all the vendor areas, that at least one third of the vendor areas, I believe, in Fairlane Mall are vacant. Mm-hmm. And in one case, the whole wing that used to be the Lord and Taylor's the structure is there, but it's all closed. And so I said, hey, you ought to allow redevelopment and residential use on sale of condos in these areas. And then the shopping mall, you'd have a place to buy food, a place to buy clothes, and then you have your condo in between, locked doors and all that. And then they would gradually change it into everything people would need there. Like right now, there's no grocery store in Fairlane Mall. But if they had people living there, you drive home and you need something in your refrigerator, so you don't necessarily just eat at the restaurants, but maybe you want to buy some fresh. So they should put a grocery store in there. And everybody I've told that to for the last 10 years have just sort of looked, oh, he's crazy, at me. But and I don't think it's ever been done that way anywhere.
It certainly has. In New York, in the Bronx, there's a condo city. And the condos are there, but the attached businesses surround the condos.
Well,
and this has been in use for, I'd say, a good 25 years in that area.
I didn't know that, and now everybody who thought I was crazy, I am referring to something that's, in fact, already been done. Not even an original idea, darn it.
Yeah.
There's multi-use complexes in Toronto and Chicago, too.
Yes.
Where that you have downtown areas, maybe in your sort of apartment building, like the lower floor or two is all retail space. Mm-hmm. And, little grocery stores and barbershops and so on. And the neighborhood is a mixed-use neighborhood. So it's not just residences, but it's businesses throughout. And that makes a city neighborhood vibrant and coming alive, very dynamic. This whole idea of having suburbs where there's nothing but houses, one after the other. Mm-hmm. Shame on Henry Ford and Edsel. But not close to facilities. That you need, that you can walk to. So therefore, you got to buy a car. See, that's why Henry Ford and Edsel were thinking, well, we put them all together, but then they can't walk anywhere, so they got to buy one of our cars in order to get,
so they can get
their food or anything else they want. So, but a terrible, inefficient master plan. And some of the best neighborhoods that have this mixed use that I've seen and nearby is Traverse City in Chicago, in certain downtown areas. Not all the areas in Chicago, but downtown Toronto, that's a lot of this. If I could afford it and they would let me stay most of the time, I would move to Toronto just because it's really vibrant, exciting downtown neighborhoods. Yeah.
Great spot.
Yeah. But it could happen here too. Who knows? With all the vacant space we have in Detroit, or the vacant space in Fairlane Mall, maybe they'll have a whole new plan that has worked elsewhere that might work here too. Okay, well, I just thought that was interesting. But that remains to be seen what's going to happen. Dearborn firefighters are getting a $415,000 grant from the federal government. And don't know why, but both of our U.S. senators, both Democrats, Levin and Stabenow, announced that. Little money is going to Roseville, additionally, $150,000, $200,000 to them. I'm not sure how it was picked. I mean, obviously, we have a wonderful operation, and it's merged with Melvindale, and we got, about a $250,000 grant from the state of Michigan to facilitate that merger, efficiency and all that. But this is almost a $500,000, folks, and I just raised this question. My usual philosophy, if you listen to the show, is that each level of government, you know, federal, state, local, should do what it does best. And there is a reason why the federal government should do a lot of things itself, like, in my humble opinion, healthcare. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the defense of the country. Okay, that standing army, yeah, we probably need one for a variety of reasons. But, and I agree with Jim Hightower, I don't think we should weaponize our police departments. We should give them military-style equipment and facilities because they're not military. They're local police officers. They're supposedly our friends, and they're helping us if we live in the city, not being ready to beat us to a pulp and gas us and you know, cart us off to some holding bin somewhere because we protest something or they think we're suspicious of something. So, you know, that definitely is a bad trend. We want to stop that. But, I mean, it's great they got the grant, but how are we better than the city of Detroit? Doesn't Detroit need a little money for their fire department? I think so. They need money for everything in Detroit. So I don't know why a federal grant, even though it's great, why should federal money give this grant to Dearborn and Roseville this time around? It's just what they call pork barrel, but it's all a noble purpose. I'm not against helping our firefighters, of course, or Roseville's, but why should it come from the federal government? State, perhaps. Local, definitely, raise taxes or whatever, but I just don't see how that is good, except it makes Stabenow and Levin look better in helping the community locally. But really, aren't they state representatives? What they do should be for the benefit of the state of Michigan.
The
whole country, of course.
The whole country.
Yeah. So I just, I don't know what philosophy is involved there, but it's just pork barrel stuff. Probably Levin and Stabenow have done, they voted in support of pork barrel money for other senators. And this is just payback.
Payback time.
Yep. Remember 3 months ago, I voted for that new little museum to birds that you put up in your downtown area, your little town in Oklahoma or something. Yeah, I voted for that, even though I think it's stupid. But now you're going to vote for the Dearborn firefighters, aren't you? And that's the way that works. Now, you say, well, how much money at the federal level is spent on these little projects that are deserving, but they shouldn't come from the federal budget? Okay, moving on now. Times Herald, I think it's unique. At least it might be in the Sunday pressing guide, but it's not even on their website yet. Dearborn Council has voted to accept the Severstall money.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, Severstall originally said that they would give a grant of about $10 million, $8.5 million now it is, to the city of Dearborn for naming rights to a conference, helping money to help to build a conference center that would be part of the Hyatt Regency. Anybody remember the Hyatt Regency? It was a few years back. Well, that was the offer then, and it's still sort of on the table, I guess, because the city has turned it around now. And so they're going to get the $8.5 million. And as we said on the show, what about the naming rights? Does that mean the new city hall has to be called the Severstall City Hall? No. It looks like from the story, and you can read it for yourself in the Times Herald, this month, indicates that the Severstall money will not be tied, their name anyway, won't be tied to naming. And the money is being split up among several projects, not just moving into the new City Hall, the Dearborn Administrative Center, but also a little money is going to go to Art Space and the old City Hall, moving the Veterans Memorial Park to the new facility. And I know there's a couple hundred thousand dollars out of that going to the East Dearborn Downtown Development Authority for their, you know, community upgrade plans too. So, and about four or five other purposes. So no one can say that the Severstall money is just going to one particular purpose. And then, of course, there'd be some naysayers that would Oh, it should have gone to my purpose. Mm-hmm. Well, it's being split up about almost a dozen different ways, although the lion's share is going to the new City Hall. But I think the point I raised a few weeks back was I didn't want Severstall to put their name even on the City Hall building. And the last time I asked, they were sort of, I think the mayor or other elected reps were saying, well, it could just be on the building, you know, Severstall Administrative Center, but City of Dearborn could still be there above it. Yeah, maybe. I didn't want that because especially now after Severstall's whole pollution record and how they've got approval from the Michigan Environmental Quality DEQ. Environmental DEQ.
Yep, Department of Environmental Quality.
Right. Gave them the right to continue polluting like they have been, which they had like 26 citations on that they didn't pay. And now they've argued that, oh, well, you know, it's not as bad as it could be, or I don't know what they argued. It's just wrong. It's wrong to allow any more pollution than what we've had. You know, it's going the wrong direction. And now, of course, Severstall also has said, hey, we're up for sale. We'd love to sell our steel plant. And that's another reason the City of Dearborn took the $8.5 million now, because the other idea would be a tax abatement plan for another 8 or 10 years. And who knows if they're going to be around, which if somebody else buys them out, this deal is null and void. So they're going to, they signed the deal. They're going to get the money before Severstall might leave. I wish we could do something about the pollution issue, but we can't.
And those pollution levels were adjusted to allow for a certain percentage more than it was previously stated.
Yes, that's exactly. No, yeah. I know. by the way, there's 10 minutes remaining in our show today. This is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. And Joanne Korchinska comes up at 2 o'clock, 2 until 6 p.m. with Highway 61, the best in the blues. She will be coming in today right after the show. And we look forward to that. The other thing I wanted to clear up before the end of the show is the story in the Dearborn Times-Herald points out that Henry Ford College, and I had a phone call from an old friend this week, and they said, oh, I was watching the cable channel. This is on Comcast, and Henry Ford College runs announcements for the community in itself. Sort of a billboard channel on the Comcast cable service here. I think there was a mistake there. They just called it Henry Ford College. They got to change. Isn't it Community College? No.
No longer. No,
John and I are on top of this, but there was a name change 2 months ago, and we are now officially Henry Ford College. It's going to take us a while to get the community part out of all of our signs and buildings. And in fact, the president said it might take 7 years to change everything. To get that, but you know, we're now moving into some four-year degree programs that we sponsor ourselves, like culinary arts will become a four-year degree program, and we're bringing in the juniors and seniors for that program starting in the fall. And so nothing wrong with cleaning up the name to reflect our four-year connection and fact, in fact. So great. But that surplus of $2.2 million, just want to tell you, and you can read the story in the Times-Herald, if you just read the headlines, and you never should just do that, it's not like we got extra money, because I'm sure there's somebody reading that commenting, oh, well, they should give it back to the city, you know, the householders here, the people who pay taxes. They don't need it? They shouldn't have. Yes. The whole idea was, yes, we broke even. We did a lot of salary cuts here, and we sold the Dearborn Heights campus back to the Dearborn Public Schools. Mm-hmm. And so we got rid of that huge debt that we had when our new president came in. Yeah. Welcome to the college. By the way, we're deeply in debt. Mm-hmm. So he straightened that out. He made a lot of tough decisions. This is Dr. Jensen, President Stan Jensen. And now he's starting to build up, as part of the original plan, we need about $10 million for a rainy day fund. So if there's a good year for property taxes or a bad year or a good year for enrollment or a bad year, because like 70-80% of our funds to operate this place actually come from student enrollment.
Yes.
And unlike other colleges, other community colleges and four-year schools, most of our money, almost 80%, comes from student tuition and fees. And we don't charge that much, but you know, some years there's a downturn. People don't choose to take classes as much, and other years they want to take classes more. And so it's, and every business knows that you should always have about a 10% reserve of your annual operating budget for emergencies that might come up. And so he's trying to build this up, but obviously 2.5 is not 10 million. It'll take about another 4 years of surpluses in order to have the rainy day fund, the emergency fund. City of Dearborn still has about, I think, $20 million left. I mean, they need a rainy day fund for the same reason, contingencies. Okay, it's not just rain, folks. We're just making that's the metaphor, rainy day fund. It's not if it rains. Okay, it's contingencies. Emergencies come up, you need to balance out to get you to the next year. So if you read the Dearborn Press and Guide from this last Wednesday, page 1A, Dearborn schools, this is K-12, not Henry Ford College, are over budget, or almost $2 million over budget for next year. Why? Because they had, by state law, had to submit their budget for this law for this year before July 1st, when it actually started. But guess what? The state legislature, they didn't choose how much money they were going to send to the public schools until after July 1st. And it wasn't as much as anybody thought.
Projections were much higher.
And in fact, the story here is almost pathetic. Some of the quotes from your elected representatives are quite shocking. I'd like to read some of these directly. People on the Dearborn Board of Ed. We have almost 20,000 students in Dearborn in K-12, and they're going to be getting about $6 less per pupil. And Trustee James Schoolsmaster said that not that many years ago, Dearborn had $40 million more per year from the state, $40 million more per year, and 1,000 fewer students. Mm-hmm. Now, that was adequate funding. And he says, or Amy Scholes says, it's a big statement of where the legislature puts children, which means doesn't put them any place very good. Just cut the money and somehow expect the teachers to do better and better and set up those standards. And how are you going to meet the standards when you've cut everything, including the morale of the teachers and the academic staff, by cutting their pay and their benefits? That doesn't help. You know, morale, that means something too, as well as other facilities. I mean, most other places in the country, Mary Lane said, one of our trustees, other places in the country spend over $8,500 per student. And here it's about $7,000 a student in Michigan. So why are we always so below average? Well, the state decides that in Lansing. The Republican-controlled legislature and the Republican governor has decided to give less and less money. Oh, yeah, I think it's a dollar or two more than last year. But again, the big cuts came 3-4 years ago, and they haven't made up for those. And the schools expected and were told that they get a little bit more, and so that's what they budgeted for. And now Dearborn will have to find a way to cut almost $2 million out of the budget that they've just approved. So where is it going to come from? As Brian Winston, the superintendent, says in this article, many of the criteria used by the state legislature have nothing to do with providing a quality education. They're purely political. Did you get that? Purely political. Some sort of philosophy or theory that they're following, or one-upmanship against the other party of some sort. Now, Winston also wanted to remind residents that there is an election in August to approve a new millage for the Wayne County Regional Educational Service Agency, and Dearborn would see money from that millage. In November, the district will ask voters also to extend its own millages, which provide $40 million to the district. And this is just a renewal, Wisden stressed. It's not a tax increase. And this millage, like the last one, would last 10 years, would extend our millage for 10 years. I don't think it's expiring this year. I think it's expiring next spring. But nonetheless, it'll be on the November vote. And it's not an extension. It doesn't make up for what we've lost from the state. I think it should, but a lot of people feel, I don't want to pay any more taxes. Okay, fine. Well, what's the state of Michigan doing cutting back money for our children, the next generation? Amy Scholes suggested the board consider cutting back to one meeting a month instead of two for K-12. She thinks some of the reports the board currently receives at meetings could instead be made into videos and put on the district's website and cable channel for trustees and the public to view on their own. I think she's tired of going to some meetings, tired of sitting there and hearing these speeches, which are, I'm sorry, it's all wonderful things about what is happening in our educational district, but they're pretty boring. And who should really know about these things? I think she's right. The community. Just get the videos. Who's going to make the videos? They don't have any money to make the videos. But somebody should make the videos and put them on the website so people can look at them if they want to find out what's happening in their schools and so on. Not just the board meetings. By the way, are the same people who are the Dearborn Board of Ed also meet, besides twice a month for K-12 right now anyway, they also meet once a month as the Board of Trustees of Henry Ford College, too. And Trustee Joseph Guido suggested starting with a trial period to see how it goes. I'm not sure it actually was approved to go to one meeting a month for K-12. Okay. Well, there's the story. Difficult times, but no, we are not, even though we have the same board, the same people, we are not the same legal entity. They can't take from Henry Ford Community College. First of all, we're trying to build back up the rainy day fund. We've got no money for contingencies, and it'll take us 4 years to get what's recommended. So I don't know. I guess Dearborn Public Schools doesn't have any rainy day money either, because they're going to make cuts to make up for the $2 million. Mm-hmm. Of course, maybe that just means they preserve their rainy day fund, which they should do anyway. Okay, well, already. It's 2 o'clock. It's WHFR Dearborn. What else do we have to finish up here before Highway 61 gets started, John? Happy Ramadan.
Happy Ramadan.
Okay. Okay, here it comes again, folks. And I know that because the calendar is different for the people in Muslim religion, each year it changes a little bit. Just so you know, where's the second sheet here? Okay. Somewhere. Okay, I do know it starts at sunset tomorrow, June 27th, and it goes to July 27th. And Access, Arab Community Services Organization, starting about 30-plus years ago here in Dearborn, and really a wonderful organization now. And, of course, Concert of Colors is part of its activities, as well as the Arab National Museum. Ramadan, they remind us, is the time of fasting, prayer, and reflection, a time of joy and merriment. It's a time to celebrate with loved ones and to help those in need in our community. And Access says, we wish our Muslim brothers and sisters peace and prosperity throughout this holy month. As we enter into this time of year, we call on the community to pause and reflect on the underlying lessons of Ramadan. And they are compassion, generosity, and discipline. And endeavor to live out those lessons as part of your everyday life. Of course, it's a lot is made that it's a fasting during the daytime hours when the sun is up, and you can eat after the sun sets at night. And that takes a lot of discipline, and it is one of the five pillars of Islam to actually celebrate Ramadan for a whole month. So it's very basic to their religious beliefs. And we wish them happiness and success in furthering that this month. Now I find it. Okay. I remembered exactly. By the way, Muslims believe that the Quran